Yes, je luistert naar weer een nieuwe aflevering van Basgasten, de podcast waarin ik, Hidde praat met bekende bassisten over hun spullen, over hun carrière en over de muziek die ze heeft gemaakt tot de artiest die ze nu zijn. En in deze aflevering spreek ik met Martin Mendes. En Martin is natuurlijk bekend als de bassist die al 25 jaar de man is naast Michael Akkerveld in Opeth. In de tussentijd vormde hij ook nog zijn eigen band White Stones en bracht daar 2 albums mee uit. Opeth speelde in Tivoli Vredenburg in Utrecht en ik sprak hem vlak voor dat concert in Studio Pandora. And also a big welcome to all my international listeners, and you're listening to a new episode of Basgasten, the podcast in which I, Hidde Roorda, talk to well-known bass players about their gear, their career, and the music that has made them into the artists they are today. Basgasten is powered by The Bassist, the magazine for the Dutch and Belgian bass player. In this episode, I'm talking to Martin Mendes, and he has, of course, been the bass player for progressive metal legends Opeth for the last 25 years. In the meantime, he founded his own band White Stones, released 2 albums with the band. Opeth played a gig in Tivoli Vredenburg in Utrecht, and I spoke to Martin just before the concert in Studio Pandora. All right, so it's rolling. That's very nice. Hi, Martin.
Hello.
I wanted to say welcome to Utrecht, but you've been here for a day already.
Yes.
We're recording this on the second day of your Utrecht stint for the 30th anniversary tour of Opeth.
Yes, that's right.
And the 32nd year of Opeth existing.
Yeah.
How's the tour been going so far?
Very good, actually. It's been a very nice run. All the shows has been almost packed, or packed pretty much. And the response has been great, actually. People seem very happy.
Yeah.
And we're also very happy to celebrate.
I can imagine, yeah. After this tour of being postponed for 2 years.
Yeah.
And you had the set list made by the fans, right? Like from which you play a song from every album?
Yes.
And right. Then had the fans decide which one to play?
Yeah.
Were there like big surprises coming out? Like, ooh, you saw a song, you're like, I don't think I remember this. Or you really had to relearn it or something?
Well, we had a couple of songs that we actually never play before. In the 30 years. I mean, this is the first time. Like the song Black Rose Immortal from the second album.
Yeah.
But that's a song that we knew that it will be on the set list. Because
you knew the fans would want
it. Yeah, people is always asking us after this song in every show, pretty much. But actually, we made like a set list before we knew the result from the voting. And it was pretty close to what we were expecting.
Yeah.
But it's a good set list. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
I saw the set list from last night. And, you know, Opeth songs are pretty long, but you have a habit of covering possibly the shortest metal song ever.
Yeah.
Right? Well, how did that come to be?
Well, I mean, actually, we had to make a little adjustment to the set list because we only have 2 hours and 15 minutes to play.
And only 2 hours
and
15?
Yeah, I mean, it's very long. Yeah,
yeah.
Still. We had firstly the song Blackwater Park in the set list, which is like 12 minutes. And we had to change that one for the song called Harvest. It's like a kind of a ballad.
Yeah.
It's half of the 6 minutes or 5 minutes long. Otherwise, we had problems with the curfew.
Right.
In a lot of places. So, yeah, but other than that, I mean, it's a long set list. But yeah, we need to cover every album, as you say. And
yeah, but then you have a 3-second song on the set as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my initial question. How did you like decide, let's cover You Suffer by Napalm Death in that 2 hours and 15 set?
Well, I mean, that's the shortest one. That's a really nice joke to do, you know. Pop people love it,
yeah,
in a way. So yeah, I will love Napalm Death. So it's a,
of course,
it's a tribute. Yeah.
I want to go back in time, like way, way, way back. And on my podcast, I always try to find out how people started playing bass. Me being a bass player myself, and I remember the first time I heard the instrument at age 9, I was like, this is my instrument. I just knew it there and then. How did that work for you? Did you know from the very start, bass is my thing?
Well, since I tried it out, yes. My father used to play bass. He stopped playing when I was pretty much 1 year old, something like that. But he kept the bass at home. So pretty much at age of 10, maybe, I was curious to see, what is that
you know,
for an instrument? So I was trying it. And it took maybe a year or something like that for me to really, I mean, it was very hard being a 10-year-old, small hands, and it was frustrating, you know. It was like, I can't do anything. But after a couple of tryings, I remember my father kind of teach me some parts, some bass lines or whatever. And then from then on, I mean, I was in love with that instrument. So, yeah.
Do you remember the first song you could actually play?
I remember some parts he told me how to play. It was like Creedence songs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. More like old rock.
Yeah, the classic stuff.
Yeah.
And do you also remember what kind of bass it was?
Yes. He had the brand was called Klira. It's a German brand.
Yeah.
And it was the same model as the Beatles, Paul McCartney.
The Violin model.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the bass. It was a really nice bass.
Yeah.
But when I grew up, when I was maybe 13 and I was playing for 1 year or something, I discovered heavy metal and I wanted to have a black bass, of course. So I sold that one and I sold it like really bad. I mean, I think I got $100.
Oh, wow.
Then. Yeah. And it was a very nice bass. But then I could buy a cheap black one.
And black is always better.
Yeah.
And so you discovered heavy music at a very young age.
Yeah.
What was the gateway band for you that got you into heavy stuff?
Well, back then I didn't have any vinyl players or CD players. So I remember one of my cousins. He's a bit older than me, and he got a cassette in high school or wherever it was. And on one side was the band called Ratos de Porão, which is a Brazilian hardcore band. And on the other side of the cassette, I think it was Nuclear Assault, the album called Game Over. And that was pretty much the first thing I heard from metal. But yeah. I mean, it was hard for me to get albums on those days.
Yeah.
But I managed always to copy a cassette from somebody, you know. So then I discovered. I went pretty much. I didn't have the. Most of the guys in the band grew up with like proper heavy metal from 80s, you know. And I kind of grew up immediately with like trash death metal, you know. So I kind of missed the 80s era.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then I discovered like Morbid Angel right away and those bands. And
that's a good way to start with Morbid Angel.
Yeah. Pretty hard, yeah.
So then were you then also like trying out what those lines were and try to figure out how to play that kind of stuff?
Actually, back then, I thought it was impossible to play that kind of music.
I think many of us still do.
Yeah. So back then, I actually grew up listening to mostly to the radio. And that's thanks to my grandfather, because I used to live in the same house as him. He was always listening to radio. And on the radio back then, it was only tango and folk music from Uruguay.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of grew up with, really. I still love it, that style. And I was trying to copy those melodies more than death metal. Death metal for me back then, it was, as I say, it's impossible for me to play that fast and make those kind of riffs, you know. So, yeah.
So you were listening to heavy stuff and then playing tango?
Yeah, well, I was trying.
At least. And then, as I read in an interview that you moved to Sweden at age 17, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
What makes a young guy from Uruguay move to Sweden? Was that the heavy music or like, oh, wow?
Yes, and that was the only goal I had in mind to play in a metal band.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you thought, I have to go to Sweden for that.
Yes, because back then I was playing with a friend of mine back in Uruguay. He was born in Sweden, and we decided both to move to Sweden together. And he was the first drummer in Opeth as well. He played for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
We only had that in mind to try to find a band or build a band in Sweden. Yeah, because we love bands from Sweden back then. The style of metal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Gothenburg thrash.
And yeah.
So, and then somehow you ended up in one of the, well, probably the biggest progressive metal band ever.
Yeah.
How did that come to be? I mean, you started there in 97?
Yeah.
How did you end up in that band? Was it because of that particular friend who introduced you?
No. At the time when were they looking for a bass player and a drummer at the same time, I think I had like 9 months being in Sweden then. And then I remember I went to like music stores. And I was listening to Opeth since I was living in Uruguay, actually. And I saw like this, back then you had these papers with the phone numbers, you know, mm-hmm. They were searching for a bass player and a drummer. And I thought, wow, this is my opportunity, I thought. So what I did, I think I had to be minutes before they went and put these papers on the store, because nobody had take this small papers with the phone number,
right.
You know? So I decided to go around to all the music shops in Stockholm and take away.
Oh, really?
All the papers. Yeah. So I thought,
that's very old school.
Very old school. So yeah, they were surprising, because they, when I try, we make a jam or something like that, and they were like, it's weird. Nobody
else responded. You were like, yeah.
I was like, strange.
I wonder why.
I met these guys, and then we make a jam, and then we talk a little bit. I couldn't speak Swedish back then, really, barely English.
Mm-hmm.
It was difficult.
Of course.
But I'm really glad they like our play, I guess, and then we have some good chemistry with together. So yeah, I'm glad they let me be in the band.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
But I can also imagine, as you have been listening to that band, even in Uruguay, that you were extremely, I would be extremely nervous for a band like that.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was so big. I mean, back then we didn't do anything as a band.
Mm-hmm.
I remember they were like promising like, tours on the way. And I think the first gig we did, it was like two years after I met them, because we didn't have any job, mm-hmm. really. When I got into the band, they were about to record the third album.
Yeah.
My Arms, Your Hairs. But that was like a week after I got into the band. So we didn't have time to rehearse.
No.
Really. We didn't have any rehearsal place, I think. So we decided, Mike decided to, he record the bass instead of me. And then, we did some shows for that, but not many. And then Still Life will be my first studio album with them.
Yeah. I heard that, talking about the Still Life album, that your favorite Opeth song is on that record. Is that correct? I mean, somebody told me that it's The More that's your favorite Opeth song.
Yeah,
ever?
I mean, one of them, for sure, is The More. I love it.
What makes it so special for you?
Well, I guess because it's my first album also.
Of course.
I got some very nice memories from those times, those days. And I don't know, I really like the kind of group that song had. I mean, that changed from time to time also.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had that. I love every record I've been into, really. But that one is a bit more special because
it's the first one.
First one, yeah.
Yeah. How does writing for Opeth work? I mean, I can imagine, like, it's Mike's band, basically.
Yeah.
But you've been in the band for so long. How does writing work now? And did that change over time?
Well, not really. He always made some demos, mm-hmm. and then he presented demos to everybody when he thinks his job is kind of done. And from then, I personally tried to make the bass a bit on my own. It's not the case for everybody because he programmed the drums as well and he made the riffs on the guitar, so yeah. So they cannot really change guitar riffs, you know. But for me, I have a little more of space to try different things, you know. And so usually what we do in the last four records, I get together with the drummer and then like for a couple of weeks before we go into the studio and try to figure out some rhythm sections mm-hmm. together, you know, for the album. But yeah, I mean, he's the main writer for sure.
Yeah, of course. But I can also imagine like the songs are so complex and so melodic that it's, I can't really imagine how it works making a demo for that song without like finishing it.
Yeah.
So without having everything composed and arranged in such a way that it's just you play what Mike has written on the demo. Mm. So how do you make it? I mean, you have a pretty distinct style of playing, also pretty distinct sound. How does that match with a finished demo, so to say?
Well, it changed a little bit, but I mean, he makes really good demos nowadays.
Yeah.
Especially since technology is allowed to everybody to have a home studio and make good stuff, you know. So he makes like really, really good demos. But I know the style of Opeth, I will say, a lot. I mean, I understand.
After 25 years, probably.
So I kind of know what would fit or not.
Yeah.
I mean, it can happen that I do something and he wants to change it for something else, but usually it's very natural for me to add if I have to add anything that fits in the music.
Do you think that also works the other way around, that Mike thinks of bass lines that would fit your playing?
I mean,
you just think of the song and...
He writes for the songs and sometimes he makes really, really good bass lines, so I don't even touch them. You know, it's like, if I feel like this is great, I don't need to change it, you know. It's just for the music, you know. It's never like an ego thing, you know, that I have to change everything. Yeah. No, it's not
my baseline.
Not at all, you know. Yeah.
I've been scrolling through the Opeth discography the last few days and I have the impression that your sound and your playing has become more prominent on the Opeth albums. Like if I compare Still Life to Blackwater Park and everything that came after that. Mm. I have the feeling that I hear more bass, both in the arrangement and in the sound. Is that something you consciously changed, or did it just happen?
I mean, it happened for the style of music we play nowadays is different.
Yeah.
There's more room for the bass. It's more room in the mix for the bass as well. When you play this kind of older style, we were playing death metal, it's very hard to get through this wall of guitars, you know, and the drums and everything so fast. But that's been like the eternal fight for me as a bass player to be heard, you know. It's like, I remember back in those days, I was a bit disappointed because every time the mix was done, it's like, come on, the bass could be a little bit more loud.
You know? A little bit more bass. Yeah, no.
Yeah. But that's the way many producers work, you know. Yeah. They don't used to take the bass that serious or loud in the mix in the metal.
A low guitar.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But since I was trying to play bass, you know, and not being like a third guitar, I thought it was important to bring the bass a little bit, just to add a more color to the music, not just to be heard, you know. In the last four albums, I mean, it's more room for the bass, and you can really appreciate more bass.
I do.
On the,
You said you started on this Clear Up violin bass and then got a black bass.
Yeah.
I think many people know you from your long stint on Fender Jazz Basses.
Yes.
Which is, well, in heavy music, not a very usual choice because, you know, everybody plays like black metal shaped basses and stuff.
Yeah.
How did your love for the jazz bass? I mean, you play, have a Sandberg signature now, which is like a jazz bass setup.
Yes.
How did you like meet the Fender sound or the jazz bass sound?
Well, I mean, at the time when I was, when I started in Opeth, when I was 18, around 18, back then I was already really into more kind of jazz or that style of music.
Yeah.
And I discovered, of course, Jaco Pastorius, and that was a big influence for me. And him playing a jazz bass for me was like, I have to try that bass, you know? So I actually recorded Still Life was with a jazz bass. So in Opeth, pretty much, I always been playing jazz bass, yeah. And yes, I mean, for me, it's such a versatile instrument, especially jazz bass.
Yeah.
I feel, I mean, it's a tough kind of bass to play fast and, you know, compared to other brands. But the sound you can get, I think, is, I love it. I mean, you can really get soft and really hard. And,
yeah.
Yeah, you know. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's, I love those basses.
It's certainly not the first time that somebody named Jaco as a big influence.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the first time I talked to a bass player in heavy music that has said, you know, Jaco is one of my biggest influences.
Yeah.
How does that combine, like, his style of playing with yours? How do you...
Well, I mean, I don't even try to play like him because it's not possible. But I guess some influence I have in my playing. But I don't know what exactly.
There is something there.
Something there, yeah. But I just love his music, man. It's, for me, it's like he's the one.
Yeah.
For real, yeah. I mean, it's so many good players nowadays, so many. But still think that what he made on the bass at the time it's only him. I mean, nobody can even get close to what he did.
Right.
Yeah.
There are so many fretless players that try to sound like him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you immediately recognize Jaco.
Oh, yes. And it's so much easier to copy something than invent it, you know?
Definitely.
He was the first one, you know?
Yeah.
That's the hard part.
Have you ever tried to incorporate more fretless on the Opeth sound? I mean, I can imagine that it would work.
Yes. I mean, I used some fretless back in the day, like I think in Still Life already some part, and then Blackwater Park and actually in the song Face of Melinda, that's a fretless bass right away, the whole song. But yes, during some albums I have some parts, not the whole song, but some parts with fretless.
And is that then your idea or Michael's idea?
My idea, actually. Yeah, yeah.
We just fretless here. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was also listening to the two Whitestone albums, which, if I am informed correctly, the band is named after the place you come from in Uruguay.
Yes.
Then translated to English.
That's right, yeah.
What made you start that project? Because I was listening to those records, like, I hear some old school Opeth style in that.
Mm.
Was that like also for you the thing to find that sound again?
No, not really. I always been writing music at home, but this time it was at the time we finished the tour for the album called Sorceress.
Mm-hmm.
We usually take like a year off, something like that. So I was writing music like right away when I go home, and I did a couple of songs that sounded death metal, and I was, oh, that's cool. I will keep doing it and record them sometime. But I didn't have any intention to release an album or something like that. But then I had like 6 songs, and I was happy with the result. And I mean, death metal for me is, since I've been listening to this style for a long, long time, and I really wanted to make someday an album just because of it. I don't know why, but yeah. So I decided this time, since I had the material, I thought it was a good opportunity to release the music.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic came, and then I had 2 years off. So I thought, well, do a second album. Why not? Since I had a record deal, and you know, but yeah, I mean, it's not like I wasn't missing at all the style of Opeth. It's just me. I mean, I love death metal.
Yeah.
And that's something I had in mind to someday to do this kind of album. So that was the perfect time to do it.
But have you ever considered taking those songs and bringing them to Mike and go, I have a song. Let's try it out.
No, Beth. But I will definitely try to write some stuff in the future.
Yeah.
I think he listened to the albums as well, and he really liked it. So I think he's more open to get some
that would be nice.
Ideas. Yeah.
Yeah. And you recorded all the bass and guitars yourself on the White Stones record.
Mm, yeah.
I can also imagine I almost every musician that I've spoken to that has written like a solo album, like I really had to, well, listening back to it now, I feel there are too many ideas on the record because there was nobody to slow me down.
Mm.
Was that something you were struggling with? Like, oh, now I have this idea and I'm recording it anyway, so let's incorporate.
Well, I was really conscious with this songwriting. I didn't want to make anything too complicated, too technical. Mm-hmm. One of the things I had in mind is just to make easy music or not that complex and groovy. That was the only two things I had in mind.
Yeah.
And so, no, I don't know. I took my time to write the songs, and I think I had a clear idea about how they should sound. I mean, so yeah, I don't know. It was a nice process, actually. It was a natural process for me because the songs came really fast, actually. Mm-hmm. But then I took the time to be sure they were good, you know, or the idea I had in mind. So, yeah.
Do you have any touring plans with White Stones?
Not for the moment. I'm pretty busy now with Opeth.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. But you never know. Maybe a third album will come someday. Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
That would be nice. I was also wondering, I think, of course, apart from Michael, you're the longest serving member of the band.
Mm.
And I think many people will immediately think of the many members Opeth has had when you're talking about, you know, Opeth in general. How does that feel like seeing these people come and go? And
well, I mean, I can understand people doesn't want to be part of this anymore. And I mean, it's a tough lifestyle. And we understood that if you want to be here, you really need to love what you do and love to do this. And I mean, for the band, I think it's been always for a good change. I mean, every musician that came in the band brings something new to the sound and some good energy also.
Yeah.
Especially now, I think we sound better than ever, I think, right now. And with the coming of the new drummer, Valtteri, he's like an injection of energy for
he's
everybody.
He's a very young guy, right?
Yeah, he's 28.
Yeah.
And he's amazing. And he makes us like wanted to do this for longer, you know. Sometimes you can feel this, you never know how long we want to play because it's been for many years, but right now we feel like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do one more album.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it feels good, actually, right now.
Very nice. Good.
Yeah.
So, and speaking of touring and playing live, what is your current setup? that you're using? I mean, I presume you use the Sandberg signature bases.
Yeah, I use those bases. And then I use dark glass amplifiers. And I have some pedals, EBS.
Mm-hmm.
And I use...
Because it's Swedish.
Yeah, yeah. I have some distortion pedals. And now I am using... envelope filter as well, a reverb pedal, and then a wah-wah. But yeah, it's a pretty easy setup, really.
Yeah.
I think for the kind of sound I used, I don't need much stuff, you know. Usually it's a clean, nice kind of sound, and then a distorted sound, like mild one, and then a heavy one. And that's pretty much what I use right now.
And you see more and more bands being on stage without amps and doing everything with in-ear monitoring and such. Yeah. But you still have speakers on stage, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
you say yes, like, yeah, of course I do.
I like to feel the bass.
Yeah, have you ever considered going in-ear and with modeling amps and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, we play with in-ears as well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But you can still feel it in the back, yeah.
And you've never had a sound technician go, I have this very nice Kemper or XFX modeling.
No, never. We pretty old school in that sense. So, yeah.
Now, and how did the switch to in-ear monitoring feel? Because then you're like, I mean, when I play with in-ears, I'm in this little bubble sort of kind of.
Yes. I mean, it took a while to get used to it. And the beginning was terrible, actually. I mean, being used to have this power from the monitors and everything. But I think it's for good. I mean, I like to play with in-ears nowadays a lot. It's more, you have more control of everything. Mm-hmm. But since we use these in-ears that you can still hear a little bit the outside.
Yeah.
That's why I like to feel the bass from the amp, because I hear it. I mean... But I think it's great to play with in-ears, actually.
Yeah.
I feel more control and you hear everything so clear. To lock in with the drums and it's perfect.
And do you play everything live? Like, is there no track running?
Nothing else. Great. It's just live, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's
one of the things. I miss that sometimes.
yeah, but that's something that we will never have tapes or click tracks and that stuff. Because that will be... terrible and boring, I think. Yeah,
especially with your kind of music, you have to like feel that.
Yeah, I mean, you have to feel a little bit dangerous every day for us, you know. It's, you never know what is going to happen, you know, and we like to think that we will be able to fuck up sometimes too.
Yeah, maybe shows are getting too perfect these days. Like, there's no room to fuck up.
Yeah, I mean, when you hear these bands that have, you hear that they have playing with the click drum, the lights are synchronized and tapes and everything. It's like listening to a CD, you know, the album.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And I don't know. We like to be a bit different every night.
Great.
Yeah.
Something I've always been wondering with these like of a complex kind of music groups and long songs. It might be a bit of a weird question, but how do you remember all this stuff? I mean, Mike is this very distinct way of, you know, writing riffs, and some might sound a little bit like, or at least are in the same kind of style.
Yeah.
How do you remember all this stuff?
I don't know.
It just happens.
It just happens, man. I don't know. That's the ginger and the juices.
Oh, yeah.
No idea, man. It's just... memory, the whole thing, you know, yeah.
You refer to the juices. People didn't hear it because it was in soundcheck.
Yeah, that's right.
And in soundcheck, you said you bring your own juice machine on tour.
Yes.
I think the biggest question is why? Don't they have like juice in the countries that you're playing?
We like to make our own juices. Yeah.
I think people still have this image of, you know, touring bands that are like rock and roll with drinking and blah, blah, and no sleep.
I mean, back in the day, yes, it was pretty much party 24/7. But nowadays, we change, man. We're getting older, and you know, we need to take care of the health.
But do you have the feeling that touring has become more intense in the last like 10 or 15 years? That you have to be healthy to.
With the age, you need to take care more of your body, for sure.
Yeah.
But back in the day, we used to tour more than we do today. Back in the day, we did these 8 weeks tours, and then we got home for 3 days, and then again 6 weeks, and so on.
Are you tired thinking of that?
Yes. But, you know, when you're 20, 30, you manage to do it. But,
yeah, somehow.
Yeah. But no, not anymore, at least. Yeah.
No, because you came in here and I was like, how are you doing? You're like, yeah, a bit tired after 8 shows of the tour.
Yeah.
Is that because of the long shows or the traveling, or is it just the age maybe? I mean, you're mid-40s.
It's a combination of everything, I guess. These shows, I mean, they're pretty long. We usually play for hour 40, 45. This is 2 hours 15. And... I mean, it's the songs require kind of, you need to be concentrate a lot, you know, so that takes a lot of energy.
Of course.
Especially these songs that we never played before, and you want to, play them well, you know, of course. And yeah, so I think it's a combination of everything.
So do you find a certain tendency... what people voted for, like the more longer songs or the more complex songs, over the by request set list? Or is it just the heavy song from album X and the longer, more symphonic song from album Y? How do you see like a one kind of style that people would really like to hear this tour?
No, I think people really appreciate the variation because it's a really... I mean, we're playing from every album, but we're playing some ballads, really heavy songs, really kind of prog songs. And that's, I think it represents Opeth very well.
Yeah.
Because it is what it is. You know, we like all these styles in once, at least. You know, so this set list is great in that sense, because you can see a little bit of every style we've been playing.
What was the biggest surprise that came out of the poll?
Was that?
What was the biggest surprise? Like, whoa, people want to hear this?
Oh, and that was the longest song, Black Rose Immortal.
Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah.
But you also already predicted that people would want to hear that, right?
Yes, of course. Other than that, I mean, it's pretty much what we thought before, because they like to hear the hits. I mean,
You know, the top 40 songs by Opeth.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And so you play 2 days in a row here in Utrecht. Do the set list or the shows differ, or is it just, it's a different room and we play?
It's a different room, that's it. We play in the same set list,
So if people were here yesterday...
Well, they will see same but
nice
different.
Sing along. Yeah, same but different.
Yeah.
you said there would be room to... not playing with a click track or whatever, there's room to fuck up.
Yeah.
Does that happen a lot?
Small fuck ups. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, happens, of course.
And how do you, I mean, small fuck ups can be fixed, of course, and just like pretending that's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Because that's what musicians do.
Yeah.
But does it still happen often that things like, drift apart in tempo or in feel, or especially with a new drummer, I can imagine it's like trying to feel the groove of the other musician. And
I mean, for real, he's talking about the drummer, he's amazing in that sense. I mean, he has such a good tempo, and so it's really easy to play with him in that sense. But other than that, I mean, we usually don't fuck up like real fuck ups.
Yeah.
You have to stop, or you know, the small things that I think just us notice. Really,
yeah, of course.
But yeah, I mean, it's it's fun in that sense. You know, you never know. It depends on the day also, you know. Yeah. Some days you are really have a lot of energy, some days not, and some days you are wherever, you know. You want to play. Yeah. You know? So, yeah. But overall, I think we play pretty okay.
And did you bring the black and the white Sandberg on tour?
Yes.
Do they differ? Or are they the same but they're different color?
Well, the black one, the body is ash, yeah, and the white one is alder. That's the only difference.
What is the difference then that you hear on? Do they sound really different? I mean, some people would argue you cannot hear wood; it's just the pickups and the
player.
A
little bit. I mean, the black one is a maple fretboard as well. Mm-hmm. On the white is ebony fretboard. Yeah. I think in the white one is a little bit more punchy, maybe the sound. And the black one is a little bit warmer, I would say. But other than that, I mean, same. We have the same position of the pickups and same pickups and everything. So
which pickups are they? These are the Delano?
Delano, yeah. GMVC, I think they call. Yeah. When we build this space, I had the opportunity in Sandberg. They gave me like a base there where I could try different positions of the pickups.
Oh, nice.
So I could move both pickups to get my setup pretty much. And I choose them compared to the traditional jazz bass a little bit more to the bridge, which is a little bit more punchy maybe.
Yeah.
But then these pickups are really have really much a lot of low end, so it compensates a little bit. So yeah, I mean, I'm happy because I used to play jazz bass, Fender jazz basses, and sometimes it was difficult to get through the mix.
Yeah,
and especially some tones or whatever, you know. And these Sandberg basses seems more even, and they get through the mix much better. So yeah,
because I think the first time I saw you play, I think on a live video, you played the Marcus Miller signature.
Yeah, I played that one for many years.
Yeah. I can imagine like that 1970s Fender sound can be difficult to get through.
Yes, it was more difficult, yeah. And that with the combination of the Dark Glass amplifier, I think it's a good, very good combination with the Sandberg bass. I'm really happy with the sound nowadays, actually.
Cool. I'm very curious tonight how it's going to sound.
Yeah.
I think you have to get back to the venue.
All right.
So I would really, really want to thank you, Martin, for doing this.
Oh, thank you, man.
And I hope you enjoy the rest of the tour.
Yeah.
And I hope a new Obeth album is on the way.
Yeah, should be someday. Yeah.
Someday. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not next year, but we'll see. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Je luistert naar de Basgasten en dit keer was ik in gesprek met Martin Mendes. Basgasten wordt gemaakt door mij, Hidden Roorda. Muziek is van Tyranny Flock. Vergeet je niet te abonneren op de podcast op je favoriete podcastplatform, de playlist te checken, een review achter te laten en vriend te worden op Vriend van de Show. Thank you for listening to this episode of Basgasten with Martin Mendes. Basgasten is made by me, Hidden Roorda. Music by Tyranny Flock. Don't forget to subscribe, check out the playlist on Spotify and leave a review on Apple Podcasts.